The first NFL teams are officially reporting to training camp this week, the rookies at least, and today I'm going to break down everything there is to know for fantasy football drafts heading into training camp. You guys are going to probably start to realize, if you're just coming back to the scene, that over the next 2 to 3 weeks, we're going to get news fast and furious. If you guys are on Twitter, there's going to be clips like crazy, reports like crazy, and make sure to be following us on TikTok and Instagram and stay tuned for the Fantasy News of the Day shorts that I'm going to be breaking down in a couple of days. In our draft guide, we also have training camp blurbs tracked manually. We're not using AI over here. We're going through and finding the most important training camp blurbs that we can. And today I'm going to go through basically every NFL team, their biggest storylines heading into training camp. If we have, you know, health storylines, progress for young players, who's playing in two wide receiver sets, who's the third down back, etc. That's what we're going to be doing today. So let's go division by division. We're going to talk about what's most intriguing. And as I'm going through each one of these teams, you're going to be able to see my underdog exposures on the left side of the screen. And this comes directly from our best ball tool. And if I go pivot to that really quick, if you guys are on Underdog, which of course, if you sign up using promo code FSE, you'll get access to our draft guide projections, Dynasty Rookie Draft Guide for free. You can use our best ball tool on the site and basically track all of your player exposures. Who are your highest drafted quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends? How much underdog money do you have into them? Your portfolio grade, who your highest stacks are, your tournament entries, your teammates drafted by team, which is what you're seeing on the screen as I go through this. And you could sort by specific creator if you want to see by my ranking specifically. You can see one of the teams that I drafted here, a lot of ADP value, a lot of uniqueness on that one. So we're going to go division by division, starting with the AFC North. For the Baltimore Ravens, the biggest story for me is the wide receiver rotation for sure. The Ravens drafted Jacoby Lane in round 3. They still have Rashad Bateman, Tez Walker, and Elijah Surratt, who they drafted in round 4. Both of those rookie receivers were top 8 receivers for me in the NFL draft. They also, as I've talked about, let Isaiah Likely walk and let Charlie Kolar walk and didn't really replace them with much. They drafted Matthew Hibner in the 4th or 5th round. Not a whole lot of replacement at tight end, so it should mean some good things for the wide receiver rotation. And as you guys can see, which is a snippet directly taken from our draft guide and the news section here, you have Elijah Surratt reportedly playing in the slot. Jacoby Lane reportedly going to be used in red zone situations. Devontae Walker has actually gotten some hype as the number 3 receiver, at least early on in training camp. The guys that I've been, you know, really dedicating my portfolio to have been Elijah Surratt so far because he goes so late. Jacoby Lane, I definitely need to draft a little bit more of, but I've been generally not super in on the Ravens offense at cost. I think Flowers just a little bit expensive for my taste, especially in a half PPR format. Derrick Henry, I haven't been getting a whole lot of. I do want to up my exposure to about 4-6% for him. Same goes for Lamar Jackson and for Mark Andrews. Again, not a ton of intrigue around the Ravens aside from the wide receiver position. Same goes for the Cincinnati Bengals. I think everybody knows the pecking order. It's Chase, it's Higgins, it's Chase Brown in the running back backfield. I guess the only thing I'm just curious about would be the health of everybody. Like, I want Joe Burrow to stay healthy. I want T. Higgins to stay healthy. Some of these guys just need to stay on the field. And I guess the second in command running back behind Chase Brown is also intriguing to me. How involved is Samaje Perine going to be? How involved is Taj Brooks going to be in the backfield? Because if Chase Brown is a workhorse in this backfield, as I've kind of graded him as in my rankings, he's a top 10 player for me in redraft leagues this year, which is way above market. A lot of people don't have him that high, hence why I have him 20% exposure because I've drafted him like absolutely crazy. Pittsburgh Steelers, the backfield duo of Jaylen Warren and Rico Dowdle, maybe one of the most ambiguous backfields in football for me. According to head coach Mike McCarthy, there's been a ton more motion added to the offense, and that's something that we saw towards the end of his tenure in Dallas. He started to use a little bit more. Apparently, Caleb Johnson, according to reports, is on the roster bubble as well. I just kind of want to know who's leading this backfield because I do think whoever starts for the Steelers is going to end up being one of the biggest values in drafts because if it's a clear starter situation, a 60-65% opportunity share, both Jaylen Warren and Rico Dowdle are going cheap enough that that's going to be a huge return on investment, especially with the way Mike McCarthy's running backs have performed the last couple of years. And I do think the Pittsburgh Steelers have an offensive line that could take a step forward. So that situation is one that I'm definitely monitoring. Warren has been my stance so far, but we'll see what happens with Dowdle and with Caleb and the other running backs in that backfield. The Cleveland Browns, Quinshon Judkins is my favorite player from this team so far. I haven't actually drafted a ton of him on Underdog because I did these drafts, you know, back in May and early June. Danny is actually en route to Buffalo as I'm speaking right now to go get us into some more slow drafts. Judkins' health is a factor here, but he was a full go in minicamp, so I do think I'm going to go with the wide receiver core as the biggest source of intrigue. You have the two rookies, first-round receiver Casey Concepcion, second-round receiver Denzel Boston. Jerry Jeudy is still there. Cedric Tillman is still there. Of course, Harold Fannin was the team's leader in targets last season. We got reports that Casey Concepcion was building a good rapport with Shedeur Sanders. Casey Concepcion apparently will be used like Zay Flowers in this new Todd Monken offense. But we did also get a report that Denzel Boston showed out in minicamps and in OTAs. So I'm very intrigued to see what the preseason usage looks like for these guys. Who is starting right away? Is Jeudy the number one still? What is going to happen exactly? Because I do think, very similar to what I just said about the Steelers backfield, I think that somebody in the Browns receiver core will pay off at cost. Casey Concepcion, Jeudy, or Boston. I don't know who it's going to be. My guess would be Casey Concepcion based on my exposures right now. I have 16% of Casey, but we'll see what happens there. NFC North. Talking about the Detroit Lions first, Sam Laporta's back injury ended his season last year. Me and Dr. James Ferretti talked about it. He gave the analogy as an actual doctor of a jelly donut where the disc that he kind of herniated is intact, but some of the jelly spilled out is basically what he talked about. And that was like the cleanup procedure that he had. As long as Sam Laporta is a full go for training camp, I expect him to A, get more expensive on the best ball market and in redraft leagues. He's actually my highest rostered player on the Detroit Lions, and I do expect him to be a very, very good pick. Part of the reason why I'm not really taking a whole lot of like Colson Loveland or Tyler Warren, and especially not, you know, McBride and Bowers, is that I think Sam Laporta has a really high ceiling still. We've seen him finish as a top three tight end already as a rookie, and the Lions have all those games indoors, really easy schedule. So I've been taking a lot of Sam Laporta, and I'm actually a little pissed that I only have 11%. I wish I was closer to 20% based on his ADP, because I do think he's going to continue to rise in overall value. Chicago Bears. One of the most ambiguous pass catcher trios in football is Luther Burden, Romo Dunze, and Colston Loveland. What is the drumbeat? That is what I'm paying attention to, because literally, I could go any which way with this receiver core. I could see Loveland being the best option. I could see Rome being the best option. I could see Burden being the best option. So far, what we've gotten as the reports have been in early May, Ben Johnson came out and said he's buying Luther Burden's stock right now. And as we know, when DJ Moore was traded, Luther Burden is going to open up that DJ Moore role and probably bring a little bit more oomph to it. Colston Loveland has said that he's made major jumps mentally. And that's important because he's a very young player still. He's only 22 years old. And then so far, it's been kind of negative news on Romo Dunze because he brought up his foot and how it's going to be an adjustment for him of how he runs and how he cuts. But as we talked about with Dr. James Ferretti, he wasn't too concerned about that. He thinks that can be kind of solved by a couple of Dr. Scholl's inserts. So does the buzz point us to an answer in this room is what I'm paying attention to. The guy that I've been very in on, unfortunately, has been Romo Dunze because he has lost some ADP. I do want to balance out my exposures to the point that, yes, I'm highest on Odunze, but I want to still get like 8% Burden, maybe 8 to 10% of Colston Loveland as well. And I do want to get a little bit more Swift because I haven't drafted him one time so far. I've been drafting a lot more Menengai at cost. Green Bay Packers. The Josh Jacobs legal situation is clearly the number one thing to monitor for me because he is my most drafted Packers player. And again, I did these drafts back before the Josh Jacobs thing happened. So unfortunately, I drafted him a lot at the 2-3 turn. His ADP is now a lot lower than that because we don't know if he's going to get suspended or any of the legal repercussions that could happen here. He was arrested for domestic battery. He was released, and that's pretty much all we know. That's pretty much it. We don't know if there's anything that's going to come of it from the league. Is it a Quinshon Judkins situation where it ends up being a whole lot of nothing, really? Like, Judkins didn't really miss any time as a result of that that legal issue. So we'll see what happens with Josh Jacobs. I'm hoping that for his sake, he can get back on the field because I do have quite a bit of him. Tucker Kraft's ACL as well. I want to see that cleared up ASAP. Hopefully he's out there in training camp participating, because I would say like the Packers receiver core is intriguing to me, but I kind of have a good idea of what to expect from it. I haven't drafted a lot of them, period. I have 2% of each guy. I would be probably closer to like 6 to 8% of Watson and Reed, and then pretty low on Golden still by the end of the offseason, but we'll see how that one materializes. The Minnesota Vikings, I think the quarterback battle is kind of a non-story. I think that Kyler Murray is going to win that, no questions asked. The thing that I'm most interested in is the backfield, because I've been treating it based on my exposures as the Aaron Jones backfield. And Jordan Mason, I have very little exposure to. I've only taken him when he's fallen quite a bit past ADP. I've taken a little bit of Damon Claiborne here and there, but what happens in this backfield? Are we going to hear running back by committee? Because I think that's what it's going to end up being. Or is somebody going to separate themselves? Because Aaron Jones, while he's dealt with injuries, has still been a very good running back when he's been on the field, which is why he's been my stance of the three running backs in that group. And I have been taking some Damon Claiborne, like I said. Moving into the AFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars have probably the most intrigue of any team heading into training camp, because not only is their receiver core a complete mess, their running back core is also very ambiguous as well. So to me, if I had to pick and rank the biggest story there, it's what is Travis Hunter's usage? Because to me, the biggest story is Travis Hunter, because with him, he is going to determine how I feel about everything else. Travis Hunter is one of my highest drafted Jaguars players. He is, in fact, the highest drafted Jaguars player that I have. But I'm worried about, you know, Parker Washington's usage if Travis Hunter is out there, which is why I haven't drafted him one time. I'm curious what Jakobi Meyers' usage will look like as well. I've drafted quite a bit of these like top two first round young ascending players, Travis Hunter and Brian Thomas Jr. But I'm curious to see as we go through the offseason, what do the reports look like? Because the reports have been pretty bullish so far on Brian Thomas Jr. He's been getting a lot of steam. The bounce back is apparently, you know, kind of in progress. And I do expect him to increase in ADP as the offseason goes along. But we've also heard some bullish reports on Parker Washington. So I don't want to full fade him. I just don't really like his price at this point in time. And I'm hoping we get some negative reports on him that'll drop him in overall cost. And then again, another big time story for the Jacksonville Jaguars is Bashel Tutten versus Chris Rodriguez, because this backfield could end up being very, very profitable for somebody, knowing that Liam Cohen is calling this offense. Now, I didn't expect to have this opinion, but apparently my stance is Chris Rodriguez over Tutten at cost. I am definitely not going to have that stance come the end of my best ball drafts. I'm hoping to have somewhere between 10 and 12% of Bashel Tutten, and then maybe somewhere around 8 to 6% of Chris Rodriguez. At the time, I thought Chris Rodriguez was going to rise in value, but knowing that he's coming off of like a foot injury, I do think we're going to see Tutten's ADP continue to skyrocket and maybe Chris Rodriguez continue to get cheaper. So that's something I definitely feel a little stupid for, not drafting a lot more of Tutten before. Indianapolis Colts, the Josh Downs two wide receiver set gate is kind of my main focus, because if he's running the most or the second most receiver routes on the team, I do really, really think that he could out target, outscore, score more fantasy points than Alec Pierce, because the most recent report on Alec Pierce is that he could return late in training camp. Like the ankle tightrope issue that he had solved in the offseason appears to be taking a little bit longer to rehab than maybe a lot of people initially anticipated. So I haven't drafted Alec Pierce one time. I expect his price to continue to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper the more he's held out of training camp. And maybe I'll get some exposure at that point. But the one thing I've learned from playing fantasy football is when a player is coming into the season already dealing with something, it's best to kind of just fade that player. Yes, there's going to be examples of players that, you know, overperform your expectations based on their injury discounts and that kind of thing. But until Alec Pierce is back on the field in preseason games, cleared for training camp, I'm probably just going to full fade him for now, continue to draft Josh Downs at will. And I probably need a lot more Tyler Warren too, because I like Tyler Warren. I just think structurally, I'm not a fan of taking a tight end early. So I haven't taken a lot of him yet. Daniel Jones has already been cleared for training camp too. So I actually think he's a half decent value where he is going. Texans, Tank Dell's health. That is my biggest story for the Houston Texans, because the receiver core in general is my biggest story for them. But if Tank Dell is cleared for training camp, he is the number two receiver on this team, in my opinion. He's the second best talent on this team. He's an outside receiver. He's best friends with the quarterback. I expect a meteoric rise in his ADP, and he is currently my highest drafted Texans player, or second highest drafted Texans player behind Nico at 15%. I expect that 198 overall ADP to be up in the 150s, 160s if he is out there 18 months removed from the surgery there. So I haven't drafted a whole lot of Jaden Higgins, only 5%. I haven't drafted any of Jalen Knoll so far, because I do think between Dell, Higgins, and Collins, I think that will be the three wide receiver set predominantly, assuming Dell is healthy. So that's something that I'm definitely going to continue to monitor. I've drafted quite a bit of Dalton Schultz as well, apparently. Titans team, the Nick Singleton situation is my number one focus, because he is my highest drafted player, period. I've drafted him on 40% of my teams. Now, his ADP did take a sharp decline after I did my slows in late May going into early June. Jim Wyatt, the team reporter, said he'd been very impressed with Nick Singleton, and he said he's getting more work. But Robert Saleh came out right after that and said that Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard are going to be the workhorses of this team. And that report got a lot of buzz, and a lot of people started to move Nick Singleton down as a result of that. And I think Saleh also mentioned something about Nick Singleton needing a lot of work or needing a lot of reps to get up to speed, which I think is true of Nick Singleton. But I do think that his price can recorrect itself back to where I was taking him early on at pick 175 or so, because I do think this is the environment where he'll thrive. He's a big, fast receiving back. There's going to be great clips of him coming out, and I think he'll start to rise back to where he was going before. So for now, I'm going to avoid him at cost because I already packed my bags early on. But if he starts to go up in ADP, I probably might start drafting him again based on the buzz that we see from him. So definitely unfortunate the CLV situation here, the closing line value of me taking him at pick 175 and his ADP being in the 200s now. But hopefully that'll recorrect itself. Moving into the NFC South, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, all eyes for me as a Buccaneers fan are on Bucky Irving because he was cleared to do some activities towards the end of minicamp. And I don't think it got enough pub that that happened because for the longest time, the reports that were weighing his ADP down because a lot of people were taking him in the fourth round and then some bad reports started coming out and now his ADP is in the fifth round at 55 overall. If he's a full go, I don't see why his ADP won't return right back to pick 40 to 46 or so where he was going before. And I did actually pack my bags a little bit on Bucky Irving. Again, unfortunately, his ADP has since come down. But a lot of that was because of that Todd Bowles report where he said he expects him back on the field sometime between the summer and fall. And everybody freaked out about that one. But then people didn't understand that a week after that, he was cleared for mini camps and he was out there doing some stuff. So if Bucky Irving gets cleared for training camp, I do think that the whole like Kenneth Gainwell is going to take over the backfield, Sean Tucker is a huge part of this backfield stuff, is just a little bit overblown. Like you got to look at the game splits last year. Sean Tucker was more involved in games where Bucky Irving was injured in. So part of his role is dependent on Bucky being injured. And also too, Kenneth Gainwell could very well just be replacing Rashad White. And Rashad White was not a hindrance to Bucky Irving for the first four or five games of the season when he was actually the starting running back and fully healthy. So again, we got to worry about Bucky Irving's health. And I know I just said about Alec Pierce that I don't like coming into the season already having an injured player. But if he's cleared and he's fully healthy, then I'm going to probably be back in on Bucky Irving. But again, if he's out for the first 2 weeks of training camp or something, I will continue to move him down my rankings. The Atlanta Falcons, one of the truest quarterback battles in the NFL, probably the biggest one in the NFL is Tua Tagovailoa versus Michael Penix. One, if Tua wins, I think he will because I think he's a better quarterback. The team has much more completions coming its way. And I think this is an underrated reason why Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and Bijan Robinson, even to an extent, have been somewhat disappointing relative to expectations the last couple of years. I think it's because Michael Penix is very inaccurate. 59.6% career completion percentage. Tua Tagovailoa over the last three seasons is more than 10% higher than that. That is a huge deal. Tua Tagovailoa, if you could say what you want about the guy, he can do one thing very well and it is throw accurate footballs. And I think that is going to be massive for Drake London, considering he's not a super downfield type of target. He is a PPR chain mover. And I think it's going to be massive for Kyle Pitts as well, because he is a downfield target and he needs more accurate passes. And Bijan obviously is a running back, so he probably would be fine with either quarterback. The thing that I'm just intrigued by is Tua Tagovailoa himself as a third quarterback in best ball. I think he's a good dart throw, as I talked about in the quarterback league winners. I do think as long as he's a starting quarterback, he might end up being a one quarterback waiver wire streamer as well. So Tua Tagovailoa and the Michael Penix battle is definitely something I'm going to be keeping an eye on. I hope Tua wins it because I think he's better for the team. The New Orleans Saints, the backfield, I've already got a clear stance on. I've talked about it already. I haven't drafted Travis Etienne one time, and I have 16% Alvin Kamara, who's since risen 21 picks of ADP. So as much as I lost some CLV on some other guys, I have gained quite a bit on Alvin Kamara. I'll pivot my focus to the receiver core. I'm actually really curious to see what happens with Jordan Tyson in the offseason, because he was dealing with a little bit of an issue in OTAs and minicamp. I think it was a lower body injury of some kind. So one of the few Saints that I'm kind of in on in the early rounds. I don't love Olave at cost. I don't love Etienne at cost. I'm not a huge fan of drafting Tyler Shuck either. So the one guy that I'm really invested in so far has been Jordan Tyson. So I'm curious to see how he develops in training camp, because he's also like a big explosive guy. I'm sure he'll get a lot of buzz and a lot of positive reports, a lot of camp videos circulating. So I'm curious to see what happens with his price. The Carolina Panthers, this one's very easy. The biggest piece of insight that I'm looking to glean from Carolina Panthers training camp is Jonathan Brooks' health. If he's out there cleared for training camp, wheels up, dude. If the second he gets cleared for training camp, I will literally flip where I have him and Chuba Hubbard ranked, because I believe wholeheartedly that the Carolina Panthers want him to win the job. And I believe wholeheartedly, because I've seen three or four reports that are available in our draft guide, that he's saying he feels 100%. in June and July. We've had multiple different beat reporters come out and say that they're going to test him regularly. They want him to win the job. They want him to be the receiving back, et cetera, et cetera. So Jonathan Brooks for me is one of my highest drafted players. Again, very good CLV that I've gotten on him. I've drafted him at pick 119 on average. He's since risen over to the top 100, basically a pick 101.9. So I've drafted quite a bit of Jonathan Brooks, and I do think he is going to end up. A quick reminder that today's video podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is the best place to play this best ball summer. All you do is draft. There's no waivers, there's no trades, no in-season management. You just draft your teams, get refined for your home redraft leagues, and collect your winnings at the end of the year. $2 million and $15 million in total prizes to the first place winner of Best Ball Mania 7. Definitely something we are max entering. We are very excited to get refined for our own home leagues, and we want you to join us using our promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit on Underdog and first play on Underdog. We'll get you our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide, and our dynasty draft guide for free. That's it. All you have to do is sign up, make a play on the site, and you will get both of our draft guides and our weekly rankings in season to help you with your start sit decisions for free. Check that out if you guys are interested. Head to Underdog Fantasy and use the promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit. Continuing to rise in ADP and could end up being a top 75 or a top 80 pick by the time it's all said and done in September, if he's cleared and if he's playing in preseason and that kind of thing. So moving on to the AFC East, we have the Buffalo Bills. My biggest investment, or one of my biggest investments in this team, because generally I haven't actually drafted a ton of Buffalo Bills players, is Dalton Kincaid. I want to monitor, number one, his health. He actually came up and said that on May 21st, this is the healthiest he's felt in a while, which is huge for him because if you guys recall, Dalton Kincaid led all tight ends in yards per out run last year. His issue was routes, and I think a large part of it, people don't put the context on Dalton Kincaid enough that part of why he was limited was not just because he can't block. It's partially because he was hurt most of the year. So if he's 100% healthy, he's in a contract season. We saw Kyle Pitts do this last year in a contract season. Do we get reports of him taking a step forward in his usage? Dawson Knox, another year older. Jackson Hawes was a decent rookie that they had last year. I really, really like Dalton Kincaid as a punt tight end. He's one of my favorite tight end picks on the board. I'm actually surprised I only have 7% of him. I thought I'd be closer to like 15%. So I definitely need to draft a lot more of him. Moving into the New England Patriots, Trevion Henderson is my highest rostered player on the team as of right now at 11%, tied with the quarterback Drake May. This backfield is going to be profitable. I feel the same way about this backfield as I said about the Steelers. Somebody's going to smash from this backfield. I don't know if it's going to be Henderson or if it's going to be Stevenson. Obviously, last year, Stevenson was the much better pick at cost, considering he was the top 24 back in points per game. On June 7th, we heard a report from a team beat reporter that Trevion has been working on his blocking and receiving. On the Locked On Patriots podcast, Nick Cattles, I believe his name is, talked about how badly the team wants Henderson to win this job. So for me, I've always been of the stance now for the last couple of months that Trevion Henderson is the favorite to lead this backfield because the team wants that to be the case, especially on third down. And I do think, as we talked about last year with Trevion, when I was not super in on him, the best course of action for him, the best way he can pay off at ADP is by catching 60 passes for Drake May and the Patriots offense. So Trevion Henderson, I think it's all in front of him. I want to continue to hear the drumbeat. I want to hear he's taking a step forward. He looks like a different player. He's always completely there mentally. Pass protection's increased. Like, I want to hear all that stuff about Trevion Henderson because, again, I do think that by the end of the offseason, he could be a 3-4 turn pick if the right buzz takes place, because that's what we saw last year. Last year, he was a 6th, 5th round pick, and then he started getting a lot of buzz. He returns a kickoff for a touchdown in the preseason. All of a sudden, people are taking him at the 3-4 turn. So Trevion Henderson, definitely a guy that I'm going to be paying attention to for the Patriots. The New York Jets, the two rookies are my intriguing kind of guys here. Kenyon Sadiq, the tight end. Omar Cooper Jr., the wide receiver. In this offense at cost, I think that you can kind of play the Jets being better than you think through other players than Garrett Wilson. Like, I am not super high on Garrett Wilson so far. I've drafted him on 7% of my teams. I think by the end of the offseason, I want to be around 4% or so. I want to be kind of fading him a little bit. And I think it's because Garrett Wilson has never had target competition like Kenyon Sadiq and Omar Cooper. And even Adonai Mitchell is getting some buzz right now too. So maybe it'll just be a thing where like the Jets are a little bit better of a passing offense than they've been. But at the same time, I just kind of want to play that outcome through the cheaper options of Omar Cooper Jr. and Kenyon Sadiq. I don't think it would be a massive, massive, dumb idea to think that the Jets could be a little bit better as a passing offense and think that Garrett Wilson is maybe not quite as good as people are thinking. So that is kind of the way that I'm playing that. The Miami Dolphins, they're just such an uninteresting fantasy offense so far. Do we really care about anybody except for Devon Achane here? I guess if there's a clear camp standout, whether it's like Malik Washington at wide receiver, Jalen Tolbert at wide receiver, maybe Chris Bell is back healthy, or Caleb Douglas, the other third round receiver that they took, somebody stands out. Maybe they're interesting in the 15th round, 14th round, 13th round of a redraft league and deeper in best ball drafts. Or maybe Greg Dulcich, who's gotten some buzz so far at tight end, becomes like an every week starter streamer type of option for people. Generally, I just think that the pass volume is going to be so low on this team that the only people that we're interested in are good matchup Malik Willis and Devon Achane every week starter. So for me, I'm not like super excited about this team, but we'll see what happens in the receiving core. The Philadelphia Eagles and the NFC East, the Mekhi Lemon drumbeat, who is by far my highest drafted Philadelphia Eagle on this team, got loud in OTAs. I want to hear that thing go off the Richter scale, because I think Mekhi Lemon is an exceptional prospect. And we've heard from the Philadelphia Inquirer, Jeff McClain, that there's going to be a lot of McVay and Shanahan influence in this new offense with Sean Mannion coming in, who of course played under Sean McVay for most of his career. Lemon is the perfect fit for that offense. So there's a reason that people like me who wanted Mekhi Lemon to go to the Los Angeles Rams were still excited when he went to the Eagles, because it's the same type of scheme. The number two in slot corners that he's going to be seeing, because Devontae Smith is going to occupy the top corner on any given candidate, any given week, is really grounds to make Mekhi Lemon kind of like this year's Emeka Egbuka. Like, if you guys recall, Emeka Egbuka, I was drafting a ton last year, talked him up throughout training camp, and of course the team just, the hype meter just went off the Richter scale with Emeka Egbuka. He's one of the most hyped rookies I can remember in the last 7 years of doing this. And I think that Mekhi Lemon could be on a similar trajectory. And I do really, really like him at cost right now, as I've talked about in previous videos. Dallas Cowboys. We kind of know everything about Dallas right now. We know Lamb's the one. We know Pickens is the two. We know Jake Ferguson's the starting tight end. We know Javonte's the starting running back. I guess my thing that I'm looking for is, who's the RB2 on this team? Because Javonte Williams has dealt with injuries in the past. And also, too, from Javonte's own perspective, is Jaden Blue taking enough of a step forward right now, because we've heard some good reports about him, that it hurts Javonte Williams? He takes away some receiving work from Javonte or something like that. Is Phil Maffa or Malik Davis going to work in more on early downs? Because Javonte Williams, as good as he was last year, was uncontested for, you know, who he was, you know, competing with. Like, Miles Sanders got hurt. Jaden Blue was a complete zero. Like, he was just alone in that backfield. And maybe it had more to do with the other backs there than it had to do with Javonte Williams. Because I think if all of us ranked the best 32 starting running backs in the NFL, not for fantasy, just as pure talents, I think Javonte Williams would come in quite a bit lower from a real talent perspective than he does from a fantasy perspective, knowing that he's going to be the Dallas Cowboys starting running back. So for me, I think Javonte Williams could end up being a little bit more risky than people think. People just assume he's safe because of the offense he's in, but it wouldn't shock me if Jaden Blue, Phil Moffa, or Malik Davis start to play better, or if they sign somebody off the scrap heap, like maybe Nick Chubb or Trey Benson or James Conner or something like that, it's possible that Javonte Williams goes down in value and goes down in ADP. The Washington Commanders, probably one of the biggest backfield battles in all of football. They're like the NFC version of what I said about the Steelers. So far, it appears that the ball is in the court of Rashad White. Rashad White has gotten some buzz from Dan Quinn. He called him a standout in camp. John Kime mentioned him as well as potentially the leader in the clubhouse. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt did sit out most of the offseason program in May and June with a soft tissue injury, though. So we'll see what happens once we get into the actual training camp period. I have not drafted really any of Bill. The only time I drafted him, he was sliding way past ADP. The guy that I'm like most invested in this offense, like I said, is Rashad White. And I love that he's climbed a bunch in ADP. I drafted him like crazy when he was really cheap. But yeah, I think he is definitely the leader in the clubhouse of the backfield there. New York Giants. Malik Nabers' health and Cam Scadaboo's health are definitely the top two things that I'm monitoring here. Cam Scadaboo appears to be fine. He's doing backflips and all that kind of stuff. I think that the Giants are going to be extremely run heavy, especially without Malik Nabers, if they're out without him for a couple of games. But Malik Nabers is the most expensive option on this team, and he's also the highest upside option on this team. So if he's cleared for week one, which I am doubting at this point in time, I think he's going to start the season on the pup. That is going to be huge for his ADP closing line value, because by August and late September, or late August and early September, he's going to be going at like the 2-3 turn if he's going to be cleared for week one. I tend to think that you should avoid drafting him for now until we know more information, because I do think that Malik Nabers probably will start the season on the pup. And maybe you want to draft a little bit more Darnell Mooney and Isaiah Likely late, because they might start the season fast if Malik Nabers is not out there. Moving on to the NFC West, the final two divisions that we have here, the NFC and AFC West. I'm curious about the tight end position. And Terrence Ferguson, but to me, the biggest question mark in this on this team, because it's obviously a really good, you know, offense, is Kyren Williams. He's my second most drafted player on this team behind only Davante Adams, who I've just been all in on drafting where he goes at the 4-5 turn. I'm very intrigued by this backfield battle, not because I think that Blake Corum is going to start outright over Kyren Williams. I just want to know, like, the sliding scale. Is it a 60-40 split, a 70-30 split, a 65-35 split? Like, I just want to know exactly what the split is going to look like. I tend to think it's going to be about a 60-40 Kyren split, and I think that Kyren will pay off big time at his ADP at that point in time, because he tends to slide in drafts. Like, I got him at pick 35 on average. His ADP is now pick 31.5. I think he should be going in the mid third round, maybe even the early third round. And he's going in the mid to late third because people are worried about Blake Corum. And in, you know, managed leagues, some people would be like, oh, I'll just draft Blake Corum later and I'll have the handcuff or whatever. But in best ball, you do really have to make that decision because they're going too expensive to the point that you probably can't draft both of them. Maybe you could, and it would be profitable like Mostert and Achane were a couple years ago. But generally, I think you have to take a stance on this backfield. So I do want to get a little bit less Kyren, a little bit more Corum, because I want to have at least 5-7% of Corum in case Kyren either gets injured or becomes a smaller part of the backfield than he's been. Seattle Seahawks. The Jadarian Price watch is the number one thing that I'm looking for. We have these reports about Jadarian Price since he was drafted. Right after he was drafted, Jeremy Fowler came out with a report saying he won't be the bell cow right away. To be expected, he's a rookie running back. It was like a week after the draft. George Halani, in OTAs and minicamp, took the first team reps. Jadarian Price then a few days later gets some reps with the first team. ESPN's Brady Henderson came out with two reports, number one being that George Halani is squarely in the plans for the Seattle Seahawks, and number two is that Jadarian Price isn't going to have to be a high-volume guy right away. So it sounds like to me, because we've heard a Seahawks beat reporter on a podcast come out and say this too, is that he's just going to have to earn the job, Jadarian Price. He's going to have to beat out Emmanuel Wilson. He's going to have to beat out George Halani. I should probably start drafting a little bit of George Halani right now. When I was drafting teams in late May, early June, he wasn't really a thing. But now that Danny's, you know, going to Buffalo to get us some more drafts in, I would probably need to start drafting him. But I am still convinced that Jadarian Price is going to win this job. I think he's the best back in the backfield. You got a UDFA in Emmanuel Wilson, a UDFA in George Halani. They don't compare really to the level of physical ability that he has. The only way that they're going to fit into the backfield, in my opinion, is in specialized roles, maybe short yardage, as we know they can do that in Seattle, or maybe it's third down stuff, which is where I expect George Halani to fit in there. So the San Francisco 49ers, the number two running back is important to me because Christian McCaffrey has the dreaded 400 touch curse coming into the season. And as we all know, Christian McCaffrey can make anybody look stupid for fading him, and I'm not fading him. I have at number five overall in my rankings ahead of Jackson Smith and Jigba. But in leagues that I don't draft Christian McCaffrey in, I pretty much want to draft Keelan Black and or Jordan James as my last round dart throw in all of those redraft leagues. And in best ball, I'm, you know, throwing darts on those guys as well, because again, Christian McCaffrey is live to go down at any point in time, especially coming off that kind of workload. So for me, figuring out who the handcuff is, I would lean Jordan James right now because Keelan Black is a rookie, but Keelan Black is a really good early down guy, and I think he complements Christian McCaffrey pretty well. So maybe he's like the new Brian Robinson of this team. Brian Robinson obviously wasn't useful in fantasy last year because CMC never got hurt, but had CMC went down for a couple games, Brian Robinson probably would have been a league winner, or at least a very productive guy in the meantime. So I'm definitely intrigued by George Kittle's injury and Ricky Pearsall's buzz as well, but the running back two in this backfield is my number one training camp report battle kind of situation for the 49ers. Arizona Cardinals, and then we can head on to the final division. I want to know more about Jeremiah Love. In my experience, nobody actually reports on this team. Every year when I do the like training camp blurbs, the fewest amount of blurbs come out of the Arizona Cardinals because I'm convinced they don't actually have any beat reporters on the Arizona Cardinals. So I want to hear more about Jeremiah Love, and I want to hear about his role, and I want to hear about what Tyler Allgeier is going to be, because I have a feeling that the most reports that we're going to hear from Arizona are going to be about Marvin Harrison Jr. and Michael Wilson and Trey McBride and stuff, and maybe Carson Beck as well. But I really want to hear a lot about Jeremiah Love. I want to hear that he looks like a man amongst boys. I want to hear him be a third down, you know, specialist. I've drafted him quite a bit. I have him 15% of my teams. In general, I'm actually quite high on the Cardinals. I've drafted 15% Jeremiah Love, 22% Tyler Allgeier as a good handcuff, 27% Marvin Harrison, you guys know I'm very high on. So the Cardinals in general kind of intrigue me. I think they can be a decent offense, but I'm probably going to cool down the exposures just a little bit. I think I've cooled down since doing the projections for them. Final division that we have here, the AFC West, the Denver Broncos backfield battle is my number one kind of training camp battle that I'm looking for, storyline that I'm looking for. The expectation, I think, for a lot of people, and definitely for me, is that J.K. Dobbins will start as long as he's healthy. But maybe R.J. Harvey takes a step forward and he's the starter when healthy. Jonah Coleman has these following reports since he's been drafted. He'll have an immediate role in short yardage. That was said by Sean Payton. He can play on all three downs. That was also said by Sean Payton. He will probably play right away. That was from Denver Post guy, I think. I can't remember his name. Jonah Coleman could spell J.K. Dobbins for short yardage touches right away. And that was a separate beat reporter that reported that. So we're getting three or four different sources talking about Jonah Coleman being a great player. Hence why he's my number one drafted running player on the Denver Broncos and one of my highest drafted running backs overall. So his ADP has actually fallen a little bit. I'm not really sure why. I guess because people are going, oh, doing projections and, you know, realizing that he needs an injury or something like that. But I think he can start without an injury. I think if he's the best back on the team, he'll start to earn touches. And maybe as the season goes along, he'll get more and more touches. Troy Franklin, you guys know I've been taking a lot of last round dart throws on as well. The Los Angeles Chargers, I love everybody on this team, it feels like. I've got 15% plus of Justin Herbert, Amarian Hampton, Quentin Johnston, and Aronde Gadsden. I need to get my lat exposure up because I don't want to be as low as I'm at right now. It's just 2%. I definitely want to be closer to 8% on him. I do want to monitor the three wide receiver set talk. Is it Trey Harris? Is it Aronde Gadsden? Who's the third receiver? Who's playing X? Is it Ladd? Is it QJ? I really want to know the alignment of this offense. And I think it will say a lot about who I gravitate towards, because if Quentin Johnston's playing X receiver, I'm going to have a crap ton of him. And I'm already kind of anticipating that to be the case. And if Aronde Gadsden's going to get in there 30, 40% as a big slot, I'm going to have a crap ton of him as well, because I've made the Jonnu Smith comparison before with Mike McDaniel's offense, and I think it's a valid one. The Kansas City Chiefs, Rashee Rice's health and suspension stuff is kind of the big one for me. Mainly health. I don't think he's going to see any further legal discipline for the same incident that he was already suspended for. Xavier Worthy's potential breakout is also something that maybe I'd be curious about, because he got a lot of buzz in OTAs and minicamp. And then the other one is, I'm not super high on Kenneth Walker. You guys know that probably by now. The reason I'm not super high on him is because I think Kenneth Walker is a rather inconsistent running back. And I think that the Chiefs are going to understand that, even though they paid him quite a bit of money, and they're going to find a role for another back in this backfield. So if people who think that Kenneth Walker is going to command 85% of the Chiefs' touches, I got bad news for you. He's never done that, not including his college days. Wake Forest and Michigan State both used a receiving back along with Kenneth Walker because he wasn't great in that facet of the game. I think he can be a great ball carrier, command the 250 plus carries no matter what. But I think that Emmett Johnson, Rashard Smith, or Amari DiMercato will work in as a primary 30, 40% snap share guy, or maybe as a committee, they get up to those numbers. So for me, I think Emmett Johnson's the most intriguing late round dart throw from this team, but we'll see what happens there. Cause I also think if Kenneth Walker were to go down, which he's definitely prone to doing, Emmett Johnson would have a chance to be pretty solid in fantasy as well. The Las Vegas Raiders in best ball, maybe not so much managed. I think like this year's Alec Pierce is something that I'm chasing after, because I was huge on Alec Pierce last year in best ball. Because if you can get an 18th round dart throw like Pierce was, or a 15th, 16th, 17th round dart throw even, to produce 5 or 6, 7 or 8 usable weeks, that is a huge profit in best ball format specifically. In manage, it's harder to figure out when to start guys like that. But I do think that we could see one of these Raiders receivers, not Bowers, the receivers, Tucker, Naylor, or Besh, come out and be a top 30 to 35 to 40 fantasy receiver with a bunch of spike weeks in the chamber. And Trey Tucker would definitely be my favorite for that job now, because Trey Tucker, I mean, he had a 40-point fantasy game last year, one of the highest scoring fantasy single game performances of anybody. And people forget that Trey Tucker is only in his third season last year. It's not like he was like a seventh year player randomly having a decent year. I do think that if Fernando Mendoza and Kirk Cousins are able to push the ball downfield a little bit more, and we know what Clint Kubiak did for the Seahawks play action game, I think that could be huge for Trey Tucker and big plays and best ball and that kind of thing. So that is every NFL team's biggest training camp storyline. Again, I want to remind you, make sure to follow the TikTok, the Instagram, Fantasy Stock Exchange, just search it up and check the link in the description, or pay attention to the YouTube shorts, because I will be breaking down all of the fantasy news. I do fantasy football news of the day in 60 seconds. Sometimes it goes longer than that. Every day, pretty much, from like July 25th to August 15th, because there's so much news coming out fast and furious that needs to be covered. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Like I said, all of the news blurbs will be tracked manually by me and Danny in the draft guide, the redraft rankings manifesto, because we pick and choose the important stuff to talk about And we make sure that you guys are aware of that stuff so you can spot patterns and look for what you want to look for and that kind of thing. Again, pay attention to health, pay attention to progress for young players, pay attention to usage and that kind of thing. And again, if you guys want to take this advice right into action, head on over to Underdog Fantasy. Use the promo code FSC when you sign up. When you sign up, you play $5 on the site. You'll get $50 in bonus entries. And also, you will get our draft guides, our 2026 projections, our 2026 redraft rankings manifesto, which includes all the news blurbs that I talked about today, and all of our rankings and our draft ready cheat sheet and all that good stuff, the FSC versus home leagues you guys have been accustomed to. And you'll also get our dynasty rookie draft guide. So if you were away for the last couple of months, we broke down all the dynasty prospects during the January through May cycle, and all that's available to you as well just for signing up on Underdog Fantasy. So you play $5 on the site, which you can then win money with. You get $50 in bonus entries, and you also get our draft guides for free in your email inbox. You also get our weekly start sit rankings for free come the regular season as well. So all of that available to you, $100 value for just a $5 sign up you can win money with. That is linked down below in the pinned comment. If you already have an Underdog account, you can also get everything I just said on the season pass. Sign up for the season pass on Flock Fantasy. $34 will cover you from now until the end of the fantasy football season. So it's not a monthly membership. It is a one-time price, $34. It will cover you the entire offseason. You get my draft guide, all the draft guides of your other favorite creators on the Flock League, and you'll also get access to all the in-season stuff and that kind of thing. So with that being said, like, comment, subscribe if you enjoyed. Peace out, and I'll talk to you soon.